Hey friend, I'm Tanisha Sela and you're listening to the Life of an Empath podcast. I'm an empath, Akashic Records reader, and intuitive guide. I'm exactly what you would expect a modern day mystic to be. I meditate, I'm a crystal lover, sporadic yogi, and I believe in love and universal goodness. I help high level creatives, empaths, and teams achieve emotional clarity and allow them to utilize intuition as business strategy. On this podcast, I share stories about my personal spiritual journey, the lessons that I'm learning through my clients, and life as a wife and mom of two toddlers. Welcome to my life. Let's get started. On today's episode, we have Luann Whatley-Belk. Lou is a rising birth educator and the writer and creator of WellWorthWatering.com, a blog and online community that centers the maternal health stories of Black women. Her life journey, both personal and professional, has challenged her to use her voice, creativity, and writing in a way that nourishes women. Lou, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad to have you back because we have to continue this conversation. Today we are talking more about the Black maternal birthing process and specifically highlighting how to create a happy one because we all need that. We all deserve that. So how does leaning into holistic birthing mentioned in the first podcast assist with creating a practice of joy in regards to birthing? What are your thoughts, Lou?
Yeah, so this is a really great topic because I really try to center a joyful experience for birthing parents, specifically Black birthing parents, and what I do in Well Worth Watering, right? So, you know, we talk about the mind, body, spirit a little bit in the last episode, but when it comes to creating a joyful birth experience, we really go back to that, right? So the idea that one would want to give themselves a full, complete checkup, if you will, right? And that includes checking in with your mind, checking in with your spirit. And that's really an approach that might seem very outlandish in an obstetrician setting, in the traditional medical setting, but that is key here when we address that complete joyful experience, right? So if we take a step back and we notice, or maybe we don't notice, right? There might be things that we experience that present as barriers to feeling that empowered and clear mindset that you need as you enter this new chapter in your life. So there might be fears around becoming a parent. There might be fears around the actual birthing experience. There might be some very real and valid fears about surviving birth as a Black woman. You know, we talked about the statistics. There might be a lot of trauma that you might be carrying around either past traumatic birth experiences or, you know, unfortunately, sexual trauma that you might have been faced with. There's a lot there that deserves addressing, right?
Because that's a good one. Let me stop you right there. That's a good one. Now, I didn't even consider sexual trauma as it pertains to then giving birth. How does that come into play? Like, how have you seen that or heard that that affects women? Do they just not want to reveal themselves in front of the doctors, or just does any part of the touching trigger them? Tell us about that.
Sure. And, you know, I just want to say upfront that I'm speaking from a removed perspective, you know, because fortunately I haven't experienced anything like that. But there was a conference that I attended that was held by the Black Mamas Matter Alliance, right? And one of the breakout sessions addressed, the name of the session was Trauma-Informed Approaches to Caring for Pregnant Black People. Our statistics are very overrepresented when it comes to sexual trauma, right? Mm-hmm. We are more likely to have been violated or molested by the time we reach, you know, the age of 18, right? Mm-hmm. So how that might manifest in the care of a pregnant person is, you're exactly right. There's an apprehension to reveal yourself. There is, of course, that memory of being touched in your private areas and your genital areas. Mm-hmm. And there is an abundance of compassion and really it's called trauma-informed care that providers need when they're caring for a survivor. I mean, the fact that someone might even be a survivor, that might not even come out if, again, that patient is not comfortable even revealing that. Even
I can see that. I can definitely see that not even coming out, but being very reserved in the process, or maybe perceived as awkward, or since we're talking specifically to Black women, like you have an attitude or are just unapproachable in the process.
Yes.
But
they're guarding their heart though, right, Tanisha? Mm-hmm. They're guarding their heart as a survivor. They're scared. There's muscle memory. The body always remembers. That's actually the name of a book, the body keeps score. I must be misquoted, you always remember that. So that manifests in a lot of ways. It can also manifest after the birth of the baby, where you feel a fear about having to change that baby. There's a lot of guarded feelings you might have about leaving that baby in the care of someone else, because there might be a fear that, unfortunately, that baby might, experience that. So there's a lot there, and I'm not doing it justice by laying these out, but there is an abundance that needs to be addressed if you realize and are ready to do that work and unwrap all of that pain as you bring that new life into the world.
Absolutely. I think it's just a good point to even just introduce, right? Because sometimes we don't even understand what there is to consider. And so just touching on it is great. It's funny that you do bring up that resource, that book, because I just got an email this week that one of my clients stumbled along that book and is reading that book and is very excited to be able to connect with that. And so very powerful resource for anybody that's going through trauma, because it's true, the body does keep score, you know?
Absolutely.
So good point. But what else? What else is a part
of it? So, you know, honestly, pregnancy isn't easy in general. Even the easiest of pregnancies isn't really that easy, right? Mm-hmm. Birthing is not easy. You know, I like to look at it as a marathon. And there's really so much to process, even if you have an uneventful pregnancy, right? So really, the overarching theme here, when we think about that joyful experience and how we create that, is understanding that everyone deserves careful and loving intention, so that you can really accept the joy that is in the birthing experience, particularly if you're coming into that experience carrying, you know, heavy mental load, as we just talked about, right? But when we take a step back and we look at birthing and we consider joy, we really need to consider it as part of a ritual in becoming, in transforming, right? I really like to look at this process this way, because you really begin to like slow down and learn something from each part of the process that you're going through, right? So when we think about, you know, the process of creating that baby, and remembering that, we think about the process of learning about our bodies and learning every day, really, how our bodies are growing, how our babies are growing, how we're changing, how we're opening, right, to make room and space for that new life. Those are all things we need to just ground ourselves in. And, you know, I like to think that your listeners are already more inclined to that kind of thing. But, you know, I really think that it's something that even I, with my second child, I thought that I was there, but I had so much further to go. And I mean, we really always do. It's not really a final destination. There's always more and always more opening that can be there. So I really encourage people to center that.
Absolutely. And I like the fact that not only did you bring up the ritual aspect, because when you think about spiritual practice, you do think about having a ritual, a morning routine, something that is going to give you space every single day. But honestly, right, let me speak in I statements. You know, that didn't happen for me. Even though I know exactly what I'm supposed to do, your focus is now all on this baby, and you kind of forget about yourself in the process. And I think that when it does come to traumas and just the emotional aspect, I think that it's natural for you to forget about yourself. And that's why I think that intuitive coaching is so needed, and it could be a big part of the holistic birthing experience, just because it's giving you permission for that hour, that time frame, to focus on yourself without the guilt, and then understand more about what has happened in your journey that may make you more susceptible to having emotional reaction in the birth, you know, in the birth process, in the doctor's office, in the delivery room, where it can get chaotic, and it gives you a practice to center from. I think that we go into autopilot, and we think that we're just doing what we need to do to take care of our baby, and it's a form of survivor's mode. You know what I mean? That protective aspect. So I do like the fact that you bring ritual, and I do think that even though when you're more spiritually inclined, you should be taking that space, you don't. So we all need reminders. We all need reminders to slow down, and we all need the information to be able to get in that mind space that, hey, this is happening, but you can still take care of you. This is happening, but it's okay to consider your emotions too, because the more emotionally sound you are, the more stable of an environment that the baby comes into. And that's what we really ultimately want. Nobody wants to come into this world in chaos. And you don't want that for your child. That's why so many people are interested in a more holistic birth, because they want to be able to choose the different dynamics that make up a powerful birthing experience. So very, very good point. But let's dig in deeper. How do we create an atmosphere for joy, if that's the goal?
Sure. So I just want to reemphasize, right? The goal here is joy. It's always joy. It's not perfection. And I say that as if I'm saying it to myself, you know, the times that I was pregnant, right? Because it's something that I often forgot. Mm-hmm. Joy can be achieved whether you are high risk, whether you are birthing vaginally, whether you have to have a cesarean, whether you're birthing at home or in the hospital, joy can be centered. Okay. And while it's critical that we educate ourselves, we completely deserve to take hold of the joy here. Okay. And so we can't embody the idea that we are bound to die or suffer as Black birthing people. And that is a huge fact that I want to emphasize here, because, you know, I think a fear that a lot of moms that aren't even expecting, I hear it quite often, is, you know, what's the point? Am I going to even survive? Will my baby survive? Will I walk through this without experiencing some sort of adverse birth trauma or losing my life? And that's, I mean, that's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. We deserve fulfilling experiences, period, point blank. And I just want to say, we deserve a birth team that believes in us, and we deserve a birth team where everyone is on the same page and everyone on that team is willing to advocate on our behalf.
Your behalf, right?
On your behalf.
Goodness. On your behalf. That is such a good point. I just want to jump in right here, because You talk about not embodying the idea that we are bound to die or suffer, but, you know, I am listening to you and remembering the things that I would call my mom to complain about, and I just got the feeling that I was supposed to endure, maybe not suffer, but just endure, you know, just get through it, just move through it, you know, and I didn't feel like I was suffering, but I did feel like there was a lot of discomfort and a lot of things that I didn't agree with. And I certainly didn't feel fulfilled, or that everybody was willing to advocate on my behalf. It was a very automatic experience. This is what you do. You're, you know, X amount of weeks. This is what you take this week. This is the blood work we need this week. The, you know, and that was it. But
yeah, I mean, that's such a good point that you make, Tanisha, because it reminds me of why joy is even something critical to center when we are having children, right? When we're going through that process, because think about all the indoctrination perhaps that your mom had, that she would then tell you, or even have the tone of voice or whatever, that energy that says, I'm going to ignore your discomfort, or I'm going to ignore that inkling inside of you, Tanisha, telling you that you could be experiencing a better situation. You deserve more. It was like, hush, hush, that part of you, mm-hmm. because this is just what we do as women, and particularly as Black women, right? That's like one of our, we strong no matter what.
The Black commandment, is it not?
Yes. Yes. And it's something that we need to dismantle, right? And so when we really start to think about, how can I embody joy? How can I make that my daily goal? How can I make sure everybody on my team understands that is on board with that? We begin to change that psyche, right? So now you have children and you're guiding them in a different way, and they have children and they're, so it's so critical. Making sure that everybody is on the same page, you need them there to stand in the gap for you, right?
Yes, absolutely.
If something is going left, if you're experiencing pain, if you know that something is not right, the last thing you need is someone there that's going to dismiss you or make you feel like you're, like it's all in your head. There are countless stories that have come out about Black women who have complained over and over again, have literally had to advocate for themselves. The famous story about Serena Williams having to diagnose her own pulmonary embolism is insane, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want to say, research shows that women who receive continuous labor support, right? So we're not necessarily just talking about a doula. A woman that receives that continuous labor support, whether through a nurse, a midwife, or a doula, are more likely to give birth without intervention or pain medications. She's more likely to be satisfied. They're more likely to be satisfied with their birth experience, and they end up having babies with higher Apgar scores, which measures how well your baby tolerated the birthing process, right? So that statistic right there obviously includes the medical team, and of course a doula is not a medical, they don't contribute medically per se, although they're trained to look for those things.
Right.
They're there really as labor support, but we're also including the partner, right? We're including people that aren't necessarily going to be in that birthing room with you. We're including people that you may or may not share your plans with that will influence your mindset of how you're going to enjoy and not just survive, because that's baseline, right?
Right.
Not just survive, but thrive and be transformed from this experience. I've heard women say that, you know, I didn't really share that I was having my baby at home. I didn't really share like exactly how it was going to be set up in the hospital because I didn't want people judging me. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's so much to think about as we think about how to ground ourselves in that. And, you know, if you're ready, I want to share like three touch points that I have for everyone about how to make sure that that joyful experience is kept intact, right? And the first piece is the birth plan. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard of a birth plan. Like you sit down and you write out all of these things you want to happen as part of your plan.
But it doesn't have an intention there or any type of, I mean, we should be setting the intention for joy is what it sounds like to begin with. That should be at the top. It had nothing about your emotional landscape on that birth plan that so many print out. I can't even remember the website, but I know it's like a standard website, right?
There's a bunch of templates that you can find for birth plans, and typically many people think of a birth plan as you said, not considering the mental, not considering the spiritual, right? Which is really important for a lot of people. It's very, you know, this is what I want to happen, this is what I don't want to happen. Don't give me an episiotomy, which is great. That's great to have that on a birth plan. But again, if we think about a joyful birthing experience in the context of mind, body, and spirit, we cannot leave those other two out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people, again, believe the power of a well thought out birth plan is not in its rigidity or the actual, like, I want this versus that. It's the empowered way, exactly what you're saying, Tanisha, in which we declare our wants and our needs and desires in a way that elevates our voice and our declaration of what joy means to us. I mean, that's powerful specifically for Black birthing people because there is an element of, you know, our voice is not heard, it's not respected, it's talked down, it's pushed, like all of these things. And so when we really begin to first educate ourselves on what it is and how the system is not really set up for our thriving, when we educate ourselves on that and really address how strong and powerful we are and how equipped we are coming into this process, we put those two together. And again, that birth plan becomes like a declaration of what we deserve, right?
Yes.
Not just a checkoff list. So that's really important to redefine that for the listeners, right? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that birth plan can include a wide range of areas. Mm-hmm. It can include from your actual pregnancy well into your postpartum months, which is, you know, asterisk. A lot of people don't include the postpartum on there, which is very, very important. Mm-hmm. So typically it'll have, again, wishes for delivery, how you'd like your labor to progress, what kinds of medical interventions you are okay with. I mentioned episiotomy, which is it's a cut that sometimes is made in the perineum mm-hmm. area to create more space so that you can push that baby out. It's not ideal. So a lot of people will say, you know, please avoid that if necessary, but you know, some people are okay with certain interventions, especially when it comes to, you know, unfortunately the baby, needing to be delivered safely and mama coming out of that safely, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll include, post-delivery actions to take or not to take, right? Like a lot of hospitals, encourage skin-to-skin contact immediately. So, right when that baby is born, put the baby on mama's chest. A lot of plans will include a request for when to cut the cord. There is a wide spread recommendation. If your listeners ever want to research something on evidence-based birth is what it's called. There is widespread evidence that delaying the cutting of the baby's cord for just a couple minutes is super beneficial to the baby. So you can be as detailed as you like on your birth plan. Some people say, you know, don't announce the gender of the baby. Some people prefer for the partner to do that. Some people prefer to have the room low. Of course, if you're birthing at home or at a birth center, you have more leeway there. But in the hospital, I mean, there are times where you don't have to have them lights on. When I had my daughter, I had her in the hospital and my doula, for a while, she cut the lights down low, and it was so helpful because I realized, like, that's how I birth. I'm like the deer in the woods. Like, turn the lights off. Everybody get away from me. So you can be specific about what kind of atmosphere, you would thrive in. If you are high risk, I want to mention this. If you are high risk or you plan to have a scheduled cesarean, you can still center joy. I said that at the top of the show, but I want to reemphasize that. It was a video I saw about a mom birthing via cesarean, and there was slow music, and I think she had to have given instructions to the birth team to have quiet, low, hushed tone. So as that baby came out, they were able to put baby right on, you know, they have to have like a surgical screen or something there, but they were able to at least put baby right on mama so that the first thing that baby heard was mama's voice, not the medical team, not clicking and clanking, none of that. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. So I just want to reemphasize there because I don't want to feel like I'm alienating anyone or somebody feels like, well, I can't do that. I can't have that. Find ways to center that joy.
It's a really good point because being high risk both times, I didn't, you know, I think that the biggest thing that I get from this now in retrospect is that intention setting is really important, but also through the birth experience, the birth plan experience, I will say, it was just very automatic. I remember getting the birth plan, a very generic template, like you mentioned, in just a packet at some point during the first one, during my first pregnancy. And the second one, I ended up having to print out one and do it for myself. But I feel like part of the joyful experience is communicating to your team that you have one. And I think where intuition and spiritual guidance comes into play is there's such an automatic process that it weakens your confidence, because I remember being uncomfortable about presenting it because there were so many things that were just this, you know, is they have their own process. And it's almost like, okay, well, if I present my very detailed birth plan, are they going to honor it? Am I going to get pushback on this? I think very early in the conversation with your birth providers, You have to have a voice, you know, and for those people that are prone to shying away from how they feel in general, for whatever reason, some people are just shy. Shyness really never goes away, you know. You can be a full-grown woman and be timid, be shy, and I think that it's very important to, you know, not lose that confidence, not lose sight of the fact that you deserve this specific experience and this is how you've chosen to communicate it, and it's up to them to review it and ask questions and whatnot. But it is a confidence thing, I felt like, just with the birth plan specifically. And I feel like I wish that someone had said to me, you know, it doesn't have to be run of the mill. It doesn't have to be, this is not a baby factory. You deserve joy too. What does joy look like to you? How would you like to experience this process, that process? Let me tell you what we're going to do here. Are you comfortable with that approach, or, you know? And so I think the birth plan itself, for some people, maybe not all people, can be a little bit intimidating because the process just kind of sucks you in and carries you along the way, which I think plays a big part in the second process that you mentioned, which is finding your people, right?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I mirror your experience in, you know, with my daughter, I had an obstetrician, and I remember giving him my birth plan and he just kind of chuckled. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to have a doula and all of that. And he just had this air of like a lot of arrogance. I think he was just an arrogant person in general. but yeah, there was definitely an air of, this is a factory. And, you know, I thank God had a healthy pregnancy. And he was like, why are you even bothering to do all of these extra things?
Yes.
When you're not even like, it was almost like you don't need all of this extra stuff.
Intimidated? Is this intimidation by us trying to take a little bit of control, or a little bit of, it's not trying to take control of the process. It's trying to make sure that you have autonomy over your body, right?
Yes, but I think that, you know, obstetricians are trained in high risk birth. Like, that's just a fact. They're trained in births that need their help for them to swoop in and surgically deliver and do things and get the baby out. They're trained in birth not being a natural, normal process. And that was one of the main reasons why I had to switch over to a midwife for second baby. But the point that you make about that tenseness when they realize that that birthing parent is reclaiming, I don't even want to say reclaim, but declaring, that's a better word, their autonomy in the process. I think there is an intimidation that they feel. I think there's an automatic defense that goes up because there's this idea that when we come to them affirming, these are the things I want, this is how it's going to go, it's not us saying I don't need you. It's us saying I realize and recognize that I am an active part of this process that wouldn't be happening if it wasn't me. I'm bringing this baby forward.
Right.
And I think that there has to be some intimidation there. And, you know, the point that you made about some people just are the way they are. Some people are shy. Some people are more comfortable speaking up for themselves. You know, I resonate with that. And I think for me, one of the reasons why I wrote that birth plan is because I always feel stronger in my writing. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I can get out on paper what you're not going to do, it's going to be easier for us to have this conversation around, you know, why I don't want Pitocin-induced birth. Why I don't want, you know what I mean? Why I don't want these things. So I will say for your listeners that are pregnant or thinking of becoming pregnant, never let go of the strengths that you do present with, right? And then use that as the fuel that you need to declare that autonomy and what you deserve, right? Everybody's not going to come out guns blazing to their obstetrician or midwife, because honestly, that's not needed. What's needed is the knowledge that you would not, this whole process wouldn't be occurring if it wasn't you. Understand that and honor that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It does lead into the people conversation, right? Because really seeking out providers that validate your experiences and that understand and value, and I have to make this point, culturally relevant care and who have a track record of listening and taking the appropriate action is so critical, for a joyful birth experience and really at the end of the day to make sure that we survive. Mm-hmm. It's incredible the amount of apathy and dismissal that have gone into the death of so many Black women during pregnancy. So, you know, during your pregnancy, it's critical that you read and find out about the Black women-led organizations that are helping us achieve those joyful and beautiful experiences for parents like yourself, right? So there are a number of organizations that do this work. One that comes to the top of mind is the National Black Doulas Association, because they have a directory of doulas that might be in your area. They also train doulas for people that are interested in that. There's also Sister Midwife Productions, who also has a directory for not just doulas. I believe she has a list of midwives and lactation consultants that that are Black women. And there is an app that is in the works. I think it's led by Kimberly Seals Allers, is the woman's name. And the purpose of this app is to really create a way for people to search for providers that have a good track record, right? So I would go on and then put my experience about the experience I had with my OB, and another woman would be able to, in my area, be able to read up about him and be like,
I want that.
So there's so much work happening. And so I really encourage people to do that research, right? To find the people, the right people that they need on their team.
It's important, I think, to have these resources. And I tell you why I was thinking about this in preparation for us chatting about this. And I was thinking that me being a little bit older, and I know that we're all having children at different ages, but, you know, it's trending towards later now because we are more focused on careers. It's not that we're, you know, popping out kids in our 20s. Some of us are, some of us aren't, you know. But I was thinking that in terms of resources and what to expect and whatnot, the people that I was thinking of in terms of trusted friends, their kids were a lot older. So not really the resource to consider when you are going through this experience so many years after someone else. So reading about these real-time experiences is really going to be powerful for you because and knowing these resources in terms of doulas and midwives and people that look like you is really important because what to expect when you're expecting is not necessarily going to be the strongest resource for us when we think about the challenges and the bias and all of the things that we're going through in addition to, you know, actually birthing this baby and growing this baby and nourishing this baby. So this is really powerful. I wish that I had known about some of these resources. And also, I'm speaking mostly to the people that are thinking about getting pregnant because you need to know all of this information before. I thought, like, my idea of what pregnancy was going to be like versus what it actually was would have been much better if I had been more informed, but I'm thinking this is what we're supposed to do. You go to the doctor, you get checked, you do this, you know, and I did consider some holistic things, but again, you know, once I got that label of high risk, I felt like everything pretty much flew out the window, for me in terms of what I hoped for, you know? So, research now, find your people in terms of providers now. And it may be that it's more conducive in terms of people with confidence and stuff like that to go ahead and ask those questions and have those conversations now. Because I feel like as you're pregnant, you're just so emotional. You could be so sick. You could be, you know, you're not as clear as you would be. But if you have an idea of the shell of the plan that you would like for yourself ahead of time, it's going to be much easier to activate yourself in that direction also with support too, when the time is right, you know, when your time comes.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And, you know, thinking about, you know, what things would be important to us, bringing back the traumatic experiences or, excuse me, trauma survivors point that we made earlier in the show. When you're looking for providers, it's really important that you find someone, if you have been, if you are a survivor, that is, that stresses that trauma-based care approach that I mentioned, right? So they stress the importance of consent. They explain everything. They ask if you're comfortable, right? And those are questions that can come, that should come from the provider, whether or not they know your history, right? But you think about somebody that may be a survivor hearing constantly, are you comfortable? Are you okay? Here's what's happening. Getting that trauma based care and then feeling more uncomfortable to then explain, you know what, I've had this experience, you know what, this is what I've been through, to then let that shield down to really be held the way they need and deserve to be, right? So super important for trauma survivors. And then the last point about finding your people, surround yourself, if not physically, then virtually, like this is recording, we're still in the pandemic, people. Mm-hmm. If not physically, then virtually or via audio or podcasts like this, with voices that lift you up and that teach you something and make you feel grounded in this process, in this ritual that you are going through physically. That is, you know, for somebody like me, that was super important. Like the affirmation game had to be on point for me because, you know, I'll share with the listeners, like I struggle with self-worth, right? And I knew that. And I was like, listen, it's going to have to be on point because I understand how the part of myself that is there that I need to, you know, lift up for what I'm about to do. Because I was having a baby at home. So I was like, I need every strong part of me to just be, you know, bathed and on display. I really needed that. And it was super helpful for me. So if not anything else, please make sure you focus on that. And then that leads us into the after, right? So you've had your well, unless you had something to say.
No, I was just going to say just two powerful words, I think, to write down. Like if there's nothing else that you take from this, just to start out your plan, joy and consent. Never thought about consent as a big word, but as you start to think about the big picture, joy and consent is powerful. And I was also going to say, you said the after postpartum joy. I feel like I didn't have a moment of joy until until both of them came out. I mean, I felt like the experience that I should have maybe had during pregnancy. You know, in pregnancy, it's all about the mom. It's all about the mom. You get the baby shower. You know, everybody wants to touch your belly. How are you? And then, you know, of course, in the postpartum, it's all about the baby. But I didn't care because it was like that was the moment that I finally relaxed into the fact that it was over. Like, I survived. It was over. So tell us about what postpartum joy looks like, because I'm interested in this.
I think that your experience, a lot of people identify with your experience. There's this big collective sigh that we take, right? Like, oh. I mean, physically, spiritually, everything. We made it. We did it. And physically, you do feel a lot better. A lot of people end up feeling, you know, a lot better. A lot of the hard work is done and now I can rest a little bit until the baby needs you constantly around the clock, right? So I want to just start out by saying, you know, healing obviously can vary. Some folks might heal very quickly. Others maybe have experienced a difficult delivery. And so I just want to stress that having patience with yourself, and again, the importance of a network and a team that is there for you, making sure that everyone is prioritizing that patience with yourself and the healing process is really key. Mom should really not be doing much other than bonding with her baby and resting, period. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case for a lot of women, right? But you know, if you have access to a team that can hold you up that way and make sure that You know, you're getting nourishing food, you're getting rest, you're getting someone to hold baby, put that baby on their skin while you bathe and do all of those things. That is really, really important. Just a quick side note, you know, for those women that have been through cesarean birth, nursing can often be notoriously difficult after cesarean, because every time you put that baby to your breast, especially after you first had a baby, your uterus contracts once those hormones send the signal to your breast to push that milk out. It also sends a signal to your uterus to contract and become smaller, which is supposed to happen, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of ensuring that your uterus goes back down to its pre-pregnancy size over the next couple of weeks. And make sure that everything's healing, everything is being expelled properly. But that can be super painful, right, for women that have had to have their uterus cut open to deliver the baby. So again, making sure that if you have had cesarean birth, making sure that you are nursing in positions that are super comfortable for you, because, you know, nursing can be a little bit rough across the board, even for people that have had an uneventful birth. So making sure that you have adjusted positions, sideline, things that make mama comfortable to do this now new job, right? This new hurdle in the marathon is really important. I want to mention, if you feel like healing remedies like sitz baths, which are, sometimes they have herbs in them, but it's really just a warm, soothing bath that helps the perineum area heal faster. And really, it's just soothing. It's just soothing.
Very soothing. Yes. My husband made a couple of those for me before the baby came, and it was really great. And you need all of the grates, all of the pampering, all of the everything, because aside from surviving, you do feel like you are disconnected from body a little bit.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right?
Oh, yes. I remember people would explain, like, okay, this is what it might feel like after having my daughter. And I was like, wow, they underestimated it. And then, you know, it's funny. I have, after having my son, I experienced new things, right? So every pregnancy can and might be different. And that was the case for me, right? After having my son, I remember feeling, walking around like a day after I had him, and it felt like I needed to give my body time for like my organs to reseat themselves, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I didn't experience that with, I hadn't experienced that with my daughter. So that was just a new experience that I then had to slow down, right? And then say, understand, you've had a different human, and this is the second time around. And it also, it had been like 6 years apart. They're about 6 years apart. Have that patience with yourself to say, no, do you really need to be up right now? No, you don't. Lay back down and give yourself time, right? So again, emphasizing that patience with yourself and with your baby, right? Sometimes people can get so frustrated in trying to nurse a new baby, and oh, you know, they're not getting it, I'm not getting it. Oftentimes it can be painful. That, you know, your breast tissue having to adjust to that often constant nursing that happens in the newborn period. So just take time to say to yourself and to your baby, it might sound silly, but it's affirming. Say to your baby, I was just born too. Mm-hmm. I was just born too, because that's true, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's your first or your sixth. You were born too. Every time you have a child, you're born again and again, you're learning different things about yourself. It's transformation over and over again. So really making sure you center that. Mm-hmm. Continue to protect your peace. I think in the aspect of the birth team and who are your people, I try to convey, like, make sure that you have people in your circle that are affirming you and lifting you up. You want to make sure that continues in your postpartum period. And again, the importance of having a team that can do that for you, because again, that rest and healing, all of that is so important for postpartum. Making sure that is paramount is so key, right? Pay close attention to what your body and your mind are telling you. There is a big risk of baby blues, right? Which is your hormones readjusting, that might give way to like sadness and feelings of depression that can give that can easily go into full-blown postpartum depression. We want to look out for that. And again, have people on your team that are asking not necessarily the questions that a doctor would ask, because a lot of Black women slip through those cracks because some of those questions are not culturally relevant, right?
They're very cold questions.
Yeah.
I don't know how they ask other people, because I, you know, I'm only myself, right? But the questions came off to me as very cold, and it kind of incited a little defensiveness in me. Like, why are you asking me this specific question? Because again, the process is so automatic, and there's no real empathy there. So the question comes off really cold. And so the assumption, one could assume that you're wondering this about me specifically. Is there something specific to me that you are thinking that I'm more prone to this or that? And I think hands down, if there's no other time where you need some support in terms of maybe intuitive support, coaching support, therapy support, it is definitely through the postpartum period, because even though you feel fine, there are a lot of things that are going on with you. There are a lot of emotions, especially if you've had a difficult pregnancy, or if you just were like me, holding your breath the entire pregnancy. And then once you breathe, you know, it's over, you kind of feel that joy, but also then it's just like all of the newness. And you're right, it doesn't matter how many kids you have, because both of my pregnancies are completely different. And I had different emotions, and there was different circumstances, you know. There are not necessarily negative circumstances that contribute, but just a different set of circumstances. And no matter how close in age or far apart your kids are, you forget. Let me tell you.
Oh, yes.
You forget, and you need to be able to put language to how you're feeling, because no matter how you're feeling, whether you are feeling sad, whether you do have the blues, whether you do feel just hyper, like overactive, because I think people can get real high strung, kind of like a high after that happens. I feel like you need that time to process. Every minute of your day cannot be dedicated to baby. Because you have to get yourself back. I also think where in coaching can really be beneficial in this is the boundary setting that needs to happen in the postpartum process as well, because it can be a really interesting dance with family and you and partner, or just you and, you know, friends or what. I mean, the boundary situation, I feel like that's the second birth plan. Well, you need a postpartum plan just for how you're going to show up and how you want everybody to show up for you or not. You know?
Yeah. That's an excellent point that you make. And there are a lot of people that view the birth plan from pregnancy right on through 6 months after baby is born to include all of the things that you addressed. How do you expect people to show up for you? In what ways? And a lot of that you can seek counsel from women. I know you said a lot of your friends, their kids were older, but, you know, it might come from conversations. Well, what would you have wanted? What kind of things did you think you needed, but you didn't? What really made you feel uplifted in your postpartum or even during pregnancy, so that you can kind of like learn from other people's experiences, which I think is something missing. I think it's something that we've always had as Black people, but it's been removed for so long, and we're now starting to think about it that way again, right? So that's a really big point to make. You know, one thing that I think is so key, and I'm so glad that you brought up the coaching, is identifying at least one person. Ideally, it's more, but identify at least one person that you can talk to about your feelings, right? And this is so important, because you're ensuring that you're not only avoiding that like complete isolation, because yes, you're resting and you're adjusting to baby, and that can sometimes be a little bit isolating between, you know, I guess pre-COVID times, people would come to the house, let me see the baby. But there's a general rule that you leave new family to adjust, right? And sometimes that can be isolating, because as you said, everybody comes to see the baby. But as someone, this is someone that I follow on Instagram, she's a lactation, also a lactation consultant and a psychotherapist. And her thing is, who's holding the mother? Everybody wants to hold the baby. Who's holding the mother, right? So find that one person that you know can pour into you. And as you said, Tanisha, making sure you include that in your plan, finding that time, that couple of minutes, it doesn't have to be a long stretch, you know, find that person to talk to, because oftentimes that can be the person that sees red flags or asks the right questions in the right way. And that goes for physical feelings too, right? Because there's a lot of things as Black women that we experience in high incidence, right? We tend to have higher incidence in postpartum preeclampsia too, which is we have the baby and our blood pressure spikes. And a lot of us slip through the cracks there, because between having that baby and the 6-week checkup, there's a lot that can happen there, right? So making sure that you have people on your team that can recognize physical things too is so important, because that is literally a lifesaver.
That's a really important point, because I feel like looking back, that medical gap seems huge when you really think about it. When you really think about, yes, you survived it. Yes, you got home. Yes, the baby's fine. But day to day up until that 6-week appointment, you really don't know what has happened physically since then. But if you are in communication with someone, whether it be a therapist, coach, someone, sometimes those feelings, sometimes those thoughts do give way to some physical manifestations. And so if you are particularly isolated, that it can be lonely, and it can also put that worry that you have just sort of overcome right back after the first week high wears away. Because that is a really, really long time when you are wondering how you are and wondering if everything shifted back the way that it was supposed to. So,
yeah, especially if you're, you know, more inclined to eat your feelings, right? And to deal with things on the inside. Like, I'm very naturally introverted. I tend to do that. And I've had to learn, like, that can only go but so far, right? So that's super critical. And I think that, Tanisha, like, you're really uniquely positioned to identify those things in new moms, because you've been through this twice. You recognize feeling those feelings of overwhelm and where do I go and, you know, how do I process? So I think that, you know, it's really key when we have people doing the work that have been through it. You've been through it. I've been through it. And that's really important, especially for Black moms. We need us helping us and guiding us. So that's really big. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to say about postpartum joy is the key is just making sure that we can make sure that there's always people holding the mother, taking action on our behalf when we are too tired or we just, you know, we cannot. You know, I said in one of the pieces that I wrote in my blog, you know, where are we and what are we really doing if the mother is the one advocating for herself by herself all the time? Like, we can't have that be the case. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been the case in general, in this country for far too long. So we really want to change that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking to myself, lost. If the mother is holding herself up and taking care of herself, lost, because the minute she goes down, then like what is to happen from there? So we definitely have to put, we have to consider the mother's joy. We do have to consider that. And, it's probably one of those things that we don't really think about. We glaze, and if we do, don't we glaze over it? You know, we want to make sure, you know, we want mom to be happy, obviously, you know, that saying, you know, mom and baby are doing fine, you know, but is she really, you know, and what can we do to make sure that she wasn't just fine when we gave the birth announcement, but she's fine, you know, 6 months later? What can we do a year later? Because, you know, it just doesn't get any easier. Right.
I was about to say the whole parenting. I mean, this could be a whole other conversation. The timeline of parenting. I think she needs to be held the entire time, and we've lost that perspective. I think, as you said, people assume the baby is fine and healthy, mama is physically fine and healthy, so we're all good, and that is oftentimes not the case. I think it becomes, when you think about joy in parenting, it becomes like the mom or the parent is now the source of joy for that baby. And so there's always a coming out, a pouring out of joy for
the child
to be happy and nourished mentally and emotionally. And all of those things are true. Like, we need that.
Mm-hmm.
How is that joy getting poured back into mom? I think that is what we lack focus on, and we don't encourage enough. So if I can be just another voice encouraging that, because there are a lot of organizations and people talking about it, if I can, you know, add to that chorus, I'm happy to.
Well, this has certainly been juicy, informative, honest, and I know that there are many people out there that are going to find this comforting just to have the knowledge. And I think it's important to have it in a relatable way and speaking from voices with experience, because it's nothing like that voice. And you know, we're becoming the elders, right? Once you have a baby, then you become a part of the group of elders, and you want to provide as much support as you possibly can. And we need that in every way that we can get it, especially in the Black community. So I want to thank you so much for joining us again, Lou. Always a pleasure. Always, always deep.
I love it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. My hope is that you always consider me a resource for spiritual wisdom and all things soul level. Allow me to offer you some action steps that you can take right now to either start or deepen your own spiritual connection. Connect me to a friend or coworker or relative of yours that needs to hear this episode now. Send it over to them, even if you've already told them all about how intuitive guidance can help and they haven't made their move yet. You can follow me at _lifeofanempath_ on Instagram, and then send me a DM so that we can schedule some phone time for you ASAP so you can start a deeper journey for yourself. Or reach out to me and let me know you want to start the process of supporting the journey of another that wouldn't have access otherwise. You can schedule your initial consult by going to my website at lifeofanempath.com. Email me at Tanisha@lifeofanempath.com and let me know that you'd love for me to share insights like you've heard on the podcast at your organization, or you would like to explore the possibilities of scheduling ongoing group facilitated emotional clarity or declutter the mind sessions for your team as we move forward toward alignment as a global community. I can't wait to connect with you.